Some years before he retired from the Unitarian Universalist ministry, the Reverend David Rankin published a little book of vignettes about his years in the ministry, and some of them are very touching, and some bring tears, and some bring a smile. And in one of them here, he offers up an experience which I probably would think only a minister could encounter. This one happened when he was the minister of the First Unitarian Church in San Francisco. I needed a haircut. I walked down the hill and entered the barber shop near Tommy's Joint on Van Ness and Gary. It was only a block from the church. The barber was a spry, elderly man with a surprising strength in his fingers and an incredible foulness in his mouth. As I submitted to the scissors, he provided scripture from Penthouse Magazine, a reading from a dozen dirty jokes, and a sermon from a personal experience in occupied France. The obscenities were never ending. Finally, when the apron was lifted, he said, "I don't believe I've seen you before. You work around here?" Now, what should I tell him? Should I tell him the truth? Should I tell him that I worked at the church? Should I tell him that I was a minister? I turned to the barber, handed him the money, and replied, "Oh, I work for the National Cash Register Company up the street. I'm in district sales." For even a dirty old man can be embarrassed. I've never been in a situation exactly like the one David described, but I've been in a few that have come pretty close. Being in a social event where not that many people know me, or every now and then even in a bar with a bunch of strangers watching a Red Sox game, you know, and things start getting a little raucous, and somebody I'm watching the game with will ask me what I do for a living. And it's remarkable how the tone changes sometimes when I tell them. I suddenly feel like I gotta go through some kind of behavior adjustment. And the last thing I want to do is make somebody uncomfortable, which is why I can understand why David gave the answer that he did to his barber. It wasn't because Dave was ashamed of being a minister. He just didn't want to be a party to putting someone else to shame. And he was fudging the truth a little about his profession. Well, he wasn't fudging the truth. He was talking out my falsehood, actually. Reverend Rankin did something authentic as well when it comes to the religion that he and I profess. We don't put people to shame. We don't play on guilt. Rather, we look for the best in people, knowing we don't always live up to that best, but we look to the best in people. We call it their inherent worth and dignity. Some may call it being a son or daughter of God. And we seek and we offer ways of living out that worthy self that each and all of you possess within yourselves. You each and all brought your worthy selves here today. Maybe some of you for the first time on this open house Sunday, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this gathering of a liberal religious community that goes by the somewhat unwieldy name of Unitarian Universalist. But are we a religious community? Let's take that one up first. And here's where I'm coming from on this. We've had our website up and running for close to 10 years now. Mike Valentine, Dan Murphy do a really good job of maintaining it. And on that website, we've got a section there called Guestbook, where anybody who logs into us, they want to send some kind of a response back to us, they can type in on the Guestbook section, and then we get to read it. Now, about 80%, maybe even 90% of those responses that we get, I would say, are positive, and they come from people who find our approach to religion very meaningful and inviting, and how can I find out more about you, and this kind of thing. But occasionally, we do get zinged pretty well. And these zingers usually start out by saying, "How can you call yourselves a religion when you don't believe in dot, 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 dot?" And that's generally followed by a recitation of all the things the person doing the logging in does believe in. And that's fine. you put yourself out there in public, you got to expect, you got to take whatever comes back at you. But the really funny thing I find about all this is that we sometimes get some of our most vociferous praise for the same reasons we get zinged for. Some of these responses will say, "Hey, this is great. A religion is not a religion." And that's generally followed by an expression of relief about all the things we allegedly don't believe in or don't do. What I find kind of intriguing about this is that from both ends of that spectrum, there's an assumption about what religion is and what a religious community is, followed by the assumption that we're not it. And what both ends of this spectrum are not seeing, I think, is that we are not an alternative to religion as such, but we try to offer an alternative way of being religious. And that's the point I would like to pursue with you for the next few moments. And if you're here for the first time today, or if you're a recent attender, to reiterate what I said during the words of welcome, if you'd like to get together with me for a little while after the service, if some of the things I say here pique your interest enough that you'd like to have some additional conversation, you know, come and join me in the fellowship room around 11:30 if you've had a chance to get a cup of coffee. And then if you want to go even further than that, beginning next Sunday night and running for 4 weeks, I'll be running a little series that we run every fall about this time called Unitarian Universalism 101. Come and join me from about 7 to 8:30 on 4 Sunday evenings. If you have children, we're providing child care. There's a place in the next to the newcomers table where you can sign up for that. So all I can really do up here for the next little bit of time that I have is to hopefully plant a few seeds of curiosity about who we are and what we're about. And as I say, invite you to a follow-up conversation with me. Well, if you're here for the first time or just coming here recently, you've probably noticed that we do act like a religious community. More specifically, like one in the Protestant Christian tradition. We gather on Sunday mornings in a house of worship in a building that is unmistakably a church. We have a Sunday school for our children. You saw all of them down here a little earlier. As you've heard, we're blessed with some really wonderful music here by both our adults and our children under the direction of our music director, Sandra. We pray in our own way. And I can explain a little more about that if you'd like, if we have a chance to get together. And as you are finding out right now, a sermon gets offered on most Sundays. Beyond this setting, we act like a religious community as well. We have social events, we have discussion groups, we have meditation spirituality groups of various types. And we have committees. And we have governing boards. In other words, we do all those kinds of things that churches do. And we seek to extend our principles and our values into the wider world, as most religious communities and congregations do. We have a very good, active social justice committee here. You just saw we take up our collections to benefit organizations beyond us. We have a community-wide coffee house called Simple Gifts. We have fun together. We celebrate the joys and the milestones of our lives. We attend to one another's pains, losses, and sorrows. We seek to offer, that is, a dance of life. And we do all this without requiring that you sign on to a predetermined or prescribed set of beliefs in order to be admitted to the dance. And that's what gives rise to some of the questions and the concerns that I spoke of earlier. For all these good things you do, some ask, are you really a religious? Well, at the risk of sounding like a former United States president, an immediate past former United States president, that depends upon what your definition of religion is. Let's take a bite at that. A little Latin lesson here. I took Latin in high school, believe it or not, more years ago than I'm going to tell you. Little public school down in southern West Virginia, they taught Latin. And I still remember one of these things we had to do were these word exercises. You know, we had to take a word apart and break it up into its Latin derivative and then figure out what each derivative meant, and you put the word back together and you see what you've got. Interesting when you do that with the term religion. You get re and legare. Now, legare means to bind together. Same word derivation that the word ligament comes from, you know, bind your bones together at the joints there. Re, as you know, means back again, like recall, return, remember. Religion, in its most literal sense then, is a verb, to bind together again. It's an ongoing process, a dance, as I like to call it. It's a dance, a process of bringing oneself back together again, of restoring your personal wholeness. Restoring that personal wholeness from the often fragmented nature of the lives we too often frantically live. And in a more cosmic sense, it is how we restore our relationship with the broken world. It is how we find a relationship with the universe, with ultimate reality, with God, however conceived. Religion. To bring back together again. End of Latin lesson. But one more definition. This one from my friend and colleague in the Unitarian Universalist Ministry, Reverend Forrest Church at the Unitarian Church of All Souls in New York City. This one's been in circulation for some time, but it still works. Religion, he said, is our human response to the dual reality of being alive and knowing that we will die. Again, a verb more than a noun. Religion has to do with how we respond to our awareness of being alive, to our awareness of having a precious and fragile life, while knowing that that precious and fragile and holy life is not ours forever. It is then with these kinds of understandings of religion that I can say without hesitation that I invite you to be a part of a religious community. For what we seek to offer you is a setting where, as I've just been alluding to, you restore your personal wholeness, where you pursue a relationship with that which is greater than yourself, and where you attend to the things you care most deeply about in this time-bound life we've been given. You ever been on an airplane where there's a layover at an airport and you're staying on the flight to continue on to the next destination? And sometimes in that kind of a situation, the pilot or the attendant will say something like, for those of you who are continuing on, if this is our ground time here, we'll be brief. I would suggest to you that truer words have never been spoken. For those of us continuing on our life journey, our ground time here is brief. How we live our ground time, and the kind of world we want to leave behind for those whose ground time outlasts ours or who comes after us, that is what the religious and the spiritual journey is really all about. It is what the dance of life is all about. Come and join the dance. When I said earlier that we didn't put out a prescribed set of beliefs, I hope you can now see that I wasn't saying that we have no beliefs or convictions or affirmations. Our belief is that as you take part in the dance of a liberal religious community like this one, you will discover and you will want to live out those things, those ideals and those principles and those values that you hold most dear, and that make your ground time here most meaningful. All that said, however, I do know that questions of belief are still ones that get most continually asked of us, going clear back to some of those website responses. So I'm going to briefly address the two that I found to be the most frequently asked ones, and I do so as an invitation, stated earlier, to join me for some further conversation during coffee hour And then if you'd like a tour of the church after that, we're going to have that available as well. If you'd just like to see the place a little bit, we'll still get you out of here in time. The Sox game doesn't start until about 2 o'clock. And, well, don't get me going on that, all right? Anyway, the two biggies are the God and Jesus questions. You probably won't hear the name God invoked in the Unitarian Universalist service as much as you would in traditional worship settings. A lot of that depends upon the particular UU congregation that you happen to be in. It's not because we have thrown the term out, although some of us do not relate to it, but rather it's because God means different things to different ones of us. Now, very few of us understand God to be a supernatural supreme being who can directly intervene in the workings of human affairs and in the world of nature. A God, say, who can call up a couple of hurricanes to punish us for our evil ways, as a state senator from Alabama actually suggested this past week in response to Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. I kid you not. Some fool of an elected official actually said that right on Fox News, putting him right in the Al-Qaeda camp, whether he knew it or not. Enough of that. Many of us do believe or sense the reality of a force or a power or a presence that is greater than ourselves and that is both within us and beyond us. Some of us call that force the spirit of life. We sing about that every single Sunday. Some call it the life force. Others call it God. But others stay away from the name altogether. But the thing is, it is how we find and how we live in relationship with this larger reality, which we feel is more important than what any one of us may happen to call it. And about Jesus. I said earlier that our behavior, our way of being as a religious community, is like most of the churches or religious communities in the Protestant Christian tradition. Very good reason for that. Our historical roots are in the Protestant tradition. The Protestant Reformation of 16th century Europe, which was one of the most defining events in Western history, brought forth the Unitarians and the Universalists, along with all the other range of Protestant denominations that we see today. It's just that we no longer regard ourselves as a definitively Christian body. Some of our Unitarian Universalist congregations, like King's Chapel down in Boston, have still retained their liberal Christian identity. Some do, some don't. But I feel safe in saying that to a greater or lesser degree, depending upon the person in the congregation, the person of Jesus remains in our midst. In fact, it was one of our early American Unitarian ancestors, a fellow named Thomas Jefferson, who drew a distinction between what he called the religion of Jesus and the religion about Jesus. Now, the religion of Jesus has to do with the life and the teachings of Jesus of Nazareth. A life and ministry centered around a loving God, one that held forth the principles of love, justice, compassion, peace, healing. These same principles find expression in our Unitarian Universalist purposes and principles today. The religion about Jesus is the doctrine, the dogma, that later came to be attached to his life, as if the only way to the person of Jesus, the only way to learn about Jesus was through this maze of doctrine and dogma. Well, whether the name of Jesus gets invoked or not, and as I say, how often that happened varies from one UU congregation to another, I feel right in saying that all Unitarian Universalist congregations and their members try to live out the life and the teachings that he exemplified. We regard Jesus as one of many great teachers of humanity, Buddha, Moses, Muhammad, or others, all of those who tried to show us the ways of love and justice and compassion for our fellow human beings and who taught us to care for this fragile planet upon which we live. All of those, in other words, who tried to teach us how to make the most of our ground time. for whatever time we headed. So I believe we are a religious community. We're also a human community. We try to live out the best in humankind, knowing that we do at times fall prey to the flaws and the failings of human beings. I'm going to close by asking you to take a look at one of the inserts in your order of service. I read this thing off with some words by one Unitarian Universalist minister. I'm going to close by another. It's the one with that poem meditation by the Reverend Richard Gilbert, titled, "We Bid You Welcome." I'm going to hold just up a couple of verses, just about a verse or two this morning. I'd like you to take that, maybe read it over during coffee hour, read it this week, because that's the kind of welcome we seek to extend to you. Just a few lines. "We bid you welcome who enter this hall as a homecoming, who have found here a room for your spirit, who find in this people a family. We bid you welcome, whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey." Now, I know you can't look at that poem without looking at that little shoe comic strip that's right there below it, which is kind of why we tack that on at the end. I've always gotten a kick out of that when I come back to it from time to time. That's a very humorous and whimsical way of stating our reason for being here. We honor and we celebrate the many individual journeys of the spirit, the individual searches for truth, the individual workings of the mind and the heart and the spirit that each of you have. We do all that by also knowing that it is indeed hard to be an individual all by yourself. That's why we are the community we are. It's hard to be an individual all by yourself. You may know your own steps, but dancing alone is not much of a dance at all. So come join us and sing together with us our closing hymn. It's number 350.